a town, starlight by the edge of the creek. The fire power of the proletariat's gone down, money's getting shallow and weak. Well, the place I love best is the sweet memories, the new path that we trod. They say low wages are reality, if we want it from here abroad. My cruel weapons have been put on the shelves. Come sit down on my knees. You are dearer to me than myself, as you yourself see. While I'm listening to the steel rails hum, got both eyes tight shut, just sitting here trying to keep the hunger from creeping its way into my gut. Maybe at the bottom, don't lag behind. Bring me my boots and shoes. You can hang back or fight your best on the front line. Sing a little bit of the working man.
There you go, those working man blues. And this is Terrible Tommy back in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on a Saturn's day. Yeah, it's cloudy and cool back here. But not too cool. No snow, no ice, so we're doing all right. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for January now. You better have your December in. I think you all do. Okay, anyhow, and then go up to resist.com and tell all your friends to go up there and get educated. No, don't go to these... these right-wing stop-and-shop joints, because they got a one-track mind, most of them. Yeah, so it's the Hollywood stuff. It's Hollywood stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is the 26th of December, 2015. Now we're on our last week here before the first of January, the new year. If you got some big plans, you better get at it now if you're going to do it in 2015. Otherwise, you're going to have to hold it off to 2016. Wow. So what are we going to do in the playpen here today? Let's see here. There was Santa Claus came through here, but he left me a damn big chunk of coal. Yeah, that's all I got out of it. He left a note down here in the bunker saying, "You've been too damn naughty to get anything." I yelled at him, "And you're fat, too, boy. Fat." Wearing that red suit. Are you a communist? Get you started off right, being all upset this week. At the end of this week, let's go back into our pessimist guide to history. I hope you don't get bored with this, because I love it. I love this stuff. 1738, the massacre of Delhi. In 1738, Nadar, the Shah of Persia, invaded India and defeated a huge Indian army before the great city of Delhi. Yeah, the battle lasted for 4 hours and resulted in the deaths of some 20,000 Indian soldiers. Talk about birth control. Accepting the surrender of the Indian Emperor Muhammad Shah, Nadar and his soldiers triumphantly entered the city of Delhi. They allowed Muhammad to return to his throne, but claim territories in western India and took the royal treasure as part of the terms of the surrender. Then Nadar imposed an economic ransom on the people of Delhi. The angered citizens rose up against the Persians, who responded by slaughtering them in the tens of thousands. The terrible massacre ended only when the Muhammad begged for an end to the killing. An eyewitness reported that some 150,000 people were slain in the uprising, although this figure is believed to be greatly exaggerated, rendered by Caesar. Sounds like the Jews. They exaggerate a lot, too. 1751, Stockholm burns. Beginning at noon, July the 31st, a series of suspicious fires broke out in Stockholm, Sweden, and though each was brought under control over the next few days, a total of 1,000 buildings were burned. Authorities arrested several suspected arsonists, but it doesn't say anything about they were convicted. 1752, three successive fire ravaged Moscow. Citizens of Moscow scarcely had time to recover from a fire on May 23rd before another disastrous fire broke out on June 3rd. This fire, whipped up by a strong southwesterly wind, raged through the day and into the night until the conflagration cut a swath of destruction 5 to 6 miles long, apparently set by the arsonists, who were seen lighting combustible material in several places and were subsequently caught. The fires of June the 3rd destroyed thousands of homes and businesses and numerous churches and monasteries before subsiding on June the 4th. Then still another fire broke out on June the 6th. This one ravaged the center of Moscow. After this third fire subsided, the luckless inhabitants of Moscow lived amidst the rubble of 18,000 burnt-out buildings. Though no one ever knew how many people had been killed, fully one-third of the city had been consumed by the fires. There you go. That's your good history. That's your solid history from the old days, man. The pessimist guide to history. That's a good glimpse into the good old days. Thousands, tens of thousands died at one time back then. I think they did better at getting rid of people back then than they do now. And they didn't need electricity to do it, or gasoline either. Oh, boys and girls, I just sent you a video of something that is not that hard to believe, but it's this time of year, it's funny. It took place in the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem in Palestine, in a church that's the authority is shared by the Greek Orthodox and the Armenian Church. And they take turns controlling this church. Well, it seems they both got together on the same day to sweep out and clean up the place, and you'll see what happens with all this Christian love. Ha, ha, ha! Well, I see old El Papo in the Vatican City. Pope Francis urged the world in his Christmas message on Friday to unite to end the atrocities by Islamic militants that he said were causing immense suffering in many countries. Well, yeah, but Pope, what about all those bombs are dropping on the Middle East? What about those thousands and thousands and thousands of tons of bombs are dropping out of airplanes and everything else, and selling all these weapons to all these people, and poison gas and everything else? You didn't say anything about that, man. Come on. Security was tight at the Vatican as Francis marked the third Christmas since his election in 2013. Read his traditional Christmas Day Urbi et Orbi, unquote, to the City of the World, addressed from the central balcony of St. Peter's Basilica. Tens of thousands of people had to have their bags checked as they entered the Vatican area and then go through the airport-style screening if they wanted to enter St. Peter's Square. Counter-terrorist police and machine guns discreetly patrolled the area in unmarked vans with dark windows. Such is the world today, boys and girls. Hark the herald angels away in a manger. There's nothing that brings out violence like Christmas. Well, I guess there's more than one way to get rid of the Jews. Israel reports a record immigration of Jews from France in 2015. A record number of Jews moved to Israel this year, and immigration. France has the largest Jewish population in Europe, which I'm not surprised at, but that's cool. So, National Socialism by any other name, wasn't that the goal in the first place? Well, this is interesting. Senior figures in Britain's Jewish community have cautiously welcomed the republication of Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf for the first time since World War II. Well, we knew you'd see it their way sooner or later. The most notorious anti-Semitic is it, or that is that anti-Semitic text of the 20th century, Mein Kampf, was originally published in two volumes in 1925 and 26, and was the first systematic exposition of Hitler's thinking on race and the Jewish peril he believed was threatening Germany. Wow. So German Jews have expressed divided opinions on the republication. Levi Salomon, spokesman for the Berlin-based Jewish Forum for Democracy Against Anti-Semitism, told the American media that he was absolutely against the publication, regardless of its annotations. Can you annotate the devil? He asked. Can you annotate a person like Hitler? Well, you mean those Jews still believe in the devil? We have met him, and he is us. You ever stop to think that this whole ISIS thing may be a Jewish setup? Well, listen to this. The leader of the Islamic State terrorist group, a terrorist group, that's the definition of somebody who doesn't like you, Abdu Bakr al-Baghdadi, he said, issued Saturday an explicit threat against Israel. Now, wouldn't they just shut up and quiet, go after him? Why would they announce it all the time? The first such indication from the organization's head that the Jewish state was on his agenda, man. In an audio recording released on social media, al-Baghdadi warned that his forces will soon meet the Jews in Palestine, Israel's Channel 2 television reported. That's a little self-serving, isn't it? The terrorist group's elusive head added that Israel will pay a heavy price in the hands of our fighters, the report said. Palestine will be our land or our home. Al-Baghdadi continued, according to the Yet news site, it will be a graveyard for you. Allah has gathered you in Palestine so that the Muslims may kill you. Well, that may be true. The Jews thought that we had forgot about Palestine and diverted our attention from it. Never! Jews, we have not forgotten Palestine for a moment, said al-Baghdadi. The leaders of the jihadi fighters will surround you on a day you think is far, but we see it as close. We're coming closer to you day by day, he concluded. In a video released last month by the Islamic State, the group threatened to wage war against the Jewish people. Flanked by masked militants holding automatic machine guns, a man brandished a knife can be seen saying that he and his jihadist comrades are prepared for a major war against Israel, with God's help and God's willing. In a message that directed to all Jews and grandchildren of monkeys and pigs, unquote. The man whose face is blurred warned that the Islamic State plans to infiltrate Israel to carry out attacks. We're coming for you from all over the world to slaughter you. Several days beforehand, the Islamic State addressed an Israeli audience for the first time ever in a Hebrew language video, warning that, quote, no Jew will be left alive once its fighters conquer Jordan and arrive at Israel's borders. Quote, this isn't just talk. We will advance towards you from everywhere, from the north, from the south, from the Sinai, from everywhere, unquote, said a masked man in green fatigues in fluent, if slightly Arabic, and French-accented Hebrew. There's those French again. The first video has since been removed from YouTube. The Hebrew clips came after the terror group released a series of videos in October glorifying the wave of deadly attacks against the Israelis. The video bearing such titles as Project Behead the Jews and Message. What the hell's going on? Uh-oh, I'm under attack by the Jews, man. I don't know where that came from. Well, this will be a good reason for Israel to want more arms and weapons from Uncle Sammy. Send us money, send us guns, they're coming for us. You got to save us. Here's a little bit more on that Jews immigrating back to Israel. Nearly 30,000 Jews moved to Israel in 2015, up from 26,500 last year, the Jewish Agency for Israel announced on Thursday. Aliyah has been on the rise in recent years, driven largely by the flow of immigrants from France into Ukraine, with this year's increase following last year's 32% surge in newcomers, which was at the time characterized by Jewish chairman Natan Sharansky as a year of record-breaking Aliyah moving back to Israel. Well, Rabbi Kahane would be proud of you, because that's what he advocated all along. And even I jumped off the top of the building, Reuben. The one gamble that Jews make when they do this kind of stuff is a lot of people who are raised supposedly with a Jew background in foreign countries take on the personality and the history of the country they're in, and like tens of thousands of Russians got out of the Soviet Union and went to Israel as Jews, but they weren't any more practicing Jews than a man in the moon, and now they're even starting National Socialist groups in Israel. So when you mix cultures up a lot, you take a big risk. An example of that would be the tens of thousands of alleged German Jews that fought on the side of Uncle Adolf during World War II. Here comes the Hollywood Ku Klux Klan. North Carolina neighborhood is shocked by KKK Christmas message. Let's see if I could bring this up here. I don't know whether I can.
When you have sinus pressure and congestion, you feel blocked.
The doors of the season. The message is everywhere. But on Monday, the Masoners got a message they didn't expect.
It's the KKK back in town. Wow.
It's a recruiting letter from the KKK with words and images that Tammy Masoner says she found rather anti-Christmas.
Oh, that ain't right. Well, that audio was jumping in and out.
Mark Cook says,
wait a minute. Anyhow, the audio cut out on that, but she's saying it's terrible, all this hate and stuff around here in North Carolina. We don't have any racism here. We love the Negroes. And the Negroes love us. Well, we might remind people that in the early 1920s, the Ku Klux Klan was at the peak of its membership, numbering 3 million strong. The growth of the hate group was fueled by the 1915 release of the silent film Birth of a Nation, which portrayed members as heroes, coinciding with the widespread xenophobia following the devastation of World War I, which was the direct cause of Wilson, who really got us into it. And if they don't like the Ku Klux Klan, why did they start World War I? The KKK hatred was directed not only at black people, but also European Catholic and Jewish immigrants flocking to the U.S. after the war. Well, I'll tell you what, a lot of that anti-Catholicism thing came from the fact that old Klansmen told me that in the East Coast communities in New Jersey and so forth, the Catholics were flying the papal flags in their areas, and that infuriated native-born Americans. So that's that. So they went riding through there grabbing their papal flags and tearing them down. In 1925 and 26, the Klan descended on Washington, D.C. for two massive marches. City officials fiercely debated whether to allow the white supremacist organization known for lynchings, violence, and terror to parade around the U.S. Capitol. The decision was ultimately made to let them march, albeit without their signature mask. The so-called conclave drew up to 50,000 Klansmen who marched through the city in a chilling display. Wow. The trouble is, back then, the KKK supported World War I and all that atrocities that went on in World War One. So that extreme patriotism worked against the white race in World War One, and the KKK should have been totally against the war.
People, and I don't frankly have time for total political correctness. And to be honest with you, this country doesn't have time either.
Donald Trump in the August debate, but in Saturday night's Democratic debate, referring to white working class Americans, Bernie Sanders put it here.
And somebody like a Trump comes along and says, I know the answers. The answer is that all of the Mexicans, they're criminals and rapists. We got to hate the Mexicans. Those are your enemies. We hate all the Muslims because all of the Muslims are terrorists. We got to hate the Muslims. Meanwhile, the rich get richer.
And in yesterday's Morning Edition interview with Steve Inskeep, President Obama was not as direct at Sanders, but it's clear what he's getting at.
But I do think that when you combine that demographic change with all the economic stresses that people have been going through because of the financial crisis, because of technology, because of globalization, the fact that wages and incomes have been flatlining for some time, and that particularly blue-collar men have had a lot of trouble in this new economy. Where
you notice how he says the demographic change instead of saying the racial change and the elimination and of the white race and white working class. And when he talks about economic woes of workers, where it's big-time white workers, he leaves the white out. You're not fooling anybody, Mr. Bongo Dongo.
Before Donald Trump ran a campaign on xenophobia and pledges to make America great again, there was another Queens native who feared the changes happening in America.
I could end the skyjackings tomorrow.
You could?
All you got to do is arm all your passengers.
Archie Bunker, the cantankerous patriarch of the 1970s sitcom All in the Family. Like Trump, he was known for spewing anti-immigrant, unabashedly racist screeds on national TV. He told America how it is from the view of his armchair. WMYC Stephen Nesson went to Archie Bunker's neighborhood in Queens to see how Trump is playing there.
In the closing credits of All in the Family, we see row after row of low-slung, solidly working-class homes in Glendale, Queens. Archie's house is here, although now it has blue vinyl siding and cheerful Christmas decorations. Around the corner is a suburban-style strip mall with a Trader Joe's, Michael's, and Home Depot. I run into 55-year-old Joe DeZoro. He was born in nearby Ozone Park and lives in Huntington, Long Island now. He's an electrician and a big fan of Donald Trump.
He's saying what I believe the majority of Americans are thinking.
DeZoro is a registered Republican and considers himself a moderate.
A lot of people are stuck on this political correctness, and he's not. And he's just speaking his mind, and he's being honest about it, where the others, I think, are being phony.
He could be talking about Donald Trump or Archie Bunker. He's a big fan of both.
Well, Archie Bunker was definitely funny. I laughed at a lot of things that Archie Bunker said.
Isn't anybody else interested in upholding standards? Our world is coming crumbling down. The coons are coming.
Donald Trump is sort of paralleling Archie Bunker and appealing to people who are simply dismayed by all the change.
Lance Strait is a professor of communications and media studies at Fordham.
Anyhow, this professor goes into all the political correctness and so forth, but it is sort of funny. If you remember Archie Bunker like I do back in the day, he could have been elected a president, or not, maybe not a president, but he certainly could have been elected a senator. Oh boy, here we go. Here we go, boys and girls, back to Israel. Right-wing Jewish activists at a protest in Tel Aviv staging torture by Shin Bet of arresting Jewish extremists. Jewish terrorists, now that's Jewish terrorists, not Islamic terrorists, in Israel are plotting to carry out more attacks as part of a plan to topple the government and launch a rebellion with the aim of appointing a king over Israel. The Israeli Security Agency charged Wednesday. The unusual statement vehemently denied charges of extremist right-wingers that the Duma arson murder suspects are being tortured. The Shin Bet accused the supporters of the suspects and their lawyers of trying to spread a hate campaign against it in order to obstruct the investigations. Previous charges by right-wingers that at least one of the suspects was denied the right to pray and to light a Hanukkah candle already have been thoroughly squashed by authorities, and no one has challenged the denial. Well, now let me get this straight. The latest accusations are that one of the suspects tried to commit suicide and that interrogators attacked the suspect's private parts. The Shin Bet stated today, as reported by the Haredi Kekar Shabbat website, the Jewish terrorists, right-wing Jewish terrorists in Israel, think that the state of Israel does not have a right to exist. Their vision is to topple the government through violence, including murder, and to launch a rebellion with the objective of appointing a king, damage relations with other countries and expel non-Jews, and to harm minorities. They have an extremist anti-Zionist ideology and continue to carry out attacks even after the arson murder at Duma, which they consider to be an example to copy. Well, you haven't seen much of that on ABC or CBS, have you? Right-wing Jews want to install a king over there and kick everybody out that's not a real Orthodox. This is probably started by the Orthodox. So I told you before, after visiting Israel, that Israel's lucky if they got 20 years left, because they've got so many factions and divisions inside Israel that the outside world don't talk about very much. That's going to come down, baby. The only thing that could keep them together in Israel is for an attack by the ISIS people, because that'll bring them together. That's one of the main ways they keep Jews fighting together, is to get all these people attacking them. Well, let's take a break from this controversial stuff and get into something a little more laid back. How about that?
Of Jesus remembered history or a religious fable? When many of the other arguments for a historical Jesus fall over, you will often hear the argument, well, mainstream historians say there was a Jesus, so that must settle it. There must have been a Jesus. It is also the case that many atheists, though convinced that there's no God, will also say, well, I think there was a Jesus. So I want to take a few minutes to convince you that mainstream historians, and atheists possibly influenced by them, are actually wrong. Now let's first of all clarify just who it is we are talking about. We are not speaking of any old character of the first century Galilee who had the name Jesus. There were lots of those, literally thousands, because Yeshua, or Yehoshua, was one of the most common Jewish names of the time. We are speaking of a character who was supposedly the source and inspiration for the fantastical tales that fill the pages of the New Testament. Yes, I am allowing for the fact that embellishment and exaggeration could have been applied to an original, simple, and genuine tale, that the man behind the legend may have been a rather ordinary character. But of course, it could not have been too ordinary, or he would not have stood out from the thousands of others who shared his name. Let me introduce you to one such figure, one favoured by mainstream historians such as Bar Ehrman and others. For them, the real Jesus was a prophet in the style of earlier Jewish prophets, who had a following for his particular brand of end time doom and gloom. Because he was unexpectedly executed, his despairing followers reinvented him as a risen Messiah or Christ. all else in the New Testament is embellishment and invention. So here we have a rationalized, acceptable Jesus, who doesn't suspend the laws of the universe. But he is only one of hundreds of rationalized Jesuses. You may have a favorite of your own, a radical rabbi, a Jewish nationalist, a healer, a teacher. You name it. They are all equally valid and all equally speculative, floating free of any factual foundation. Now, why do I say these various alternative Jesuses are speculations? Because not one of them is based on hard, verifiable evidence from non-biblical sources. Any one of them is possibly true, but is any one of them even probably true? Each is derived from a selective reading of the gospel stories. Each is built up from certain passages, discounting all the rest as pious fabrication. That's why the so-called mainstream historians cut the ground from beneath each other. What is the pious fabrication to one is the residual element of a genuine historical episode to another. Yet not one part of the story is immune from being pious fiction to some and having the ring of truth to others. But there is an alternative to this free-for-all, join-the-dots-and-make-your-own-Jesus approach. And that is to recognize that these speculations are no better than seeing the signs of the zodiac in the night sky. In reality, there is no figure there, whether a sign of the zodiac or a Jesus of Nazareth. Now, Christianity makes a claim that a truly fabulous character started the movement with his teachings and miracles, climaxing in his resurrection appearances after death. But can rational minds really claim that some minor character, below the visible event horizon of history, was either necessary or useful to a story that is acknowledged to be, in all salient aspects, fabricated from religious literature? The simplest, parsimonious explanation is that no human Jesus ever existed. Now, although historians like Barman think that it required the memory of a dead holy man to get the first Christians dreaming up a resurrected Messiah, in truth, merely the idea of a dead holy man works just as well. And we can be absolutely certain it was just the idea of a dead holy man, because the one thing we can say about the Gospels is that they were not written by simple, illiterate, Aramaic-speaking fishermen and peasants who knew Jesus, but were written decades later by literate, educated writers who wrote in Greek and were, incidentally, rather hazy about the Jewish landscape. We are not dealing with eyewitnesses. The gospel writers had either to be told the story or had to read their inspiration elsewhere. And what could they have read in the holy books of the Jews, translated into Greek centuries earlier? They would have read of healing and resurrection miracles, tales of food multiplication, of divine judgments, of wise prophets in special communication with God, who wander about making pleasing and sometimes enigmatic wisdom statements. They would have read of a suffering servant who takes on the sins of the world, of babies born by divine intervention. In other words, they would have read all the core elements in order to write an inspiring story of a Jewish saviour God-man, a Jesus Christ. All good stuff, of course, for a religious fable. But it isn't history. It isn't true. It's more astounding rubbish.
Well, that's the end of our peaceful part of the show, the non-controversial part of the show. Now we'll get back to the real blood and guts. I just noticed I might have left that clip clear out. after I review the show, if it's not in there, I'll bring it to you the next show. It's funny the way the evangelical Christians of this country, you know, do fellatio to Israel and all the Jews, but at the same time they gripe and moan because the Jews aren't buying their Jesus stuff. There was an article in there on the web about that. One American missionary said, "What's wrong with these Jews?" An irate American missionary blurted out in an email he thought was going to his friend, but went instead to the Jewish Press Online's editor. The feedback email of the Jewish Press on Wednesday received what it probably supposed to be an irate comment in a private email to a friend by our reader, criticizing an article we ran earlier in the day about a missionary group who donated state-of-the-art equipment to several dozen Jewish security coordinators from the Ishkal region council alongside the Gaza Strip. The only catch was the group Gentile Ministry also included in the package a stack of Bibles, each with an attached page proving the Jewish prophets had prophesied the coming of Jesus. Needless to say, our readers in Israel and abroad had some unkind things to say about the group, which prompted the angry letter that said above a link to our story. "Hello, George. Amazing, is it not? Evangelical Christians are the best friends of Israel, the best friends Israel has, and yet the Jews refuse even to discuss Christ." Well, maybe it's because he never existed. Read some of the comments below. Oh, man, this is funny. This is funny, 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 funny. Anyhow, that's it for there. That's it. Now you see why I say Israel's got maybe 20 years left, if that. Every faction in the world arguing. And remember, evangelicals make it clear in the Christian Bible that when Jesus comes back, if all the Jews do not immediately convert to Christianity and fall at his feet, they're all going to die. We're going to kill them all. Well, what's wrong with Hitler? What's wrong with Hitler? This is a lot more radical than what Hitler said.
Look, listen to this. "Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious, or daft, and you feel that you've had quite enough..."
Just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 90 miles a second, so it's reckoned, a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. keeps on expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, the speed of light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, cause there's bugger all down here on Earth.
Well, I'm aghast. I'm aghast. A top-secret document dated February 2011 reveals that the British spy agency, GCHQ, with knowledge and apparent cooperation of the NSA, acquired the capability to covertly exploit security vulnerabilities in 13 different models of firewalls made by Juniper Networks, a leading provider of networking and internet security gear. The six-page document titled Assessment of Intelligence Opportunity, Juniper, raised questions about whether the intelligence agencies were responsible for or culpable in the creation of security holes disclosed by Juniper last week. While it does not establish a certain link between GCHQ, NSA, and the Juniper hacks, it does make it clear that, like the unidentified parties behind those hacks, the agencies found ways to penetrate the NetScreen line of security products, which helps companies create online firewalls and virtual private networks, or VPNs. It further indicates that also, like the hackers, GCHQ's capabilities clustered around an operating system called Screen OS, which powers only a subset of products sold by Juniper, including the NetScreen line. Juniper's other products, which include high-volume internet routers, run a different operation system called Junos. The possibility of links between the security holes and the intelligence agency is particularly important given an ongoing debate in the U.S. and the U.K. over whether governments should have back doors allowing access to encrypted data. Cryptographers, incidentally, I was almost into the cryptography school at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey back in 1957, but I chose to go another route. Anyhow, and security researchers have raised the possibility that one of the newly discovered Juniper vulnerabilities stemmed from an encryption backdoor engineered by NASA and co-opted by someone else. Meanwhile, U.S. officials are reviewing how the Juniper hackers could affect their own networks, putting them in awkward positions of scrambling to shore up their own encryptions, even if they criticize the growing use of encryption by others. Well, let me tell you something. I got out of the notion of encryption several years ago when experts told me there's no defense, really. You can slow them down, but you're not going to stop them. The secret of security is don't talk about anything illegal on a telephone, on a website, on an email, or even in a bar. The author of that's perfect security is to keep your mouth shut. I have nothing to say. The author of the 2011 GCHQ document, an NSA employee who was working with GCHQ as part of its access strategy team, takes a similar adversarial view of encryption, referring to Juniper as a threat and a target because it provides technology to protect data from eavesdropping, far from suggesting that the security agencies should help the U.S. and the U.K. companies mend their digital defenses. The document says that the agencies must keep up with Juniper technology in the pursuit of SIGINT, or signals intelligence. Quote, the threat comes from Juniper's investment and emphasis on being a security leader, unquote, the document says. Quote, if SIGINT community falls behind, it might take years to regain a Juniper firewall or router access capability if Juniper continues to rapidly increase their security. Now, if you think that is crazy, I mean, it's getting crazier and crazier. More encryption, more trying to get be secret. There is no secrets. Somebody knows the secrets, and somebody can get at any of the secrets. So, if you want to keep anything secret, don't talk. Just think about it, and then be careful. Now, let's see what these over-the-counter drug companies are doing. The pharmaceutical companies that manufacture and market OxyContin, Vicodin, and other highly addictive opioid painkillers, drugs that have fueled the epidemic of overdoses and heroin addiction, are funding nonprofit groups fighting furiously against the efforts to reform how these drugs are prescribed. While the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was close to finalizing voluntary prescribing guidelines for opiate painkillers next month, it abruptly changed course. Guess what? Surprise, surprise. According to a report from Associated Press, the CDC abandoned its January target date instead of opening the guidelines to the public. Comment after a number of industry-funded groups like the U.S. Pain Foundation, obviously backed by industry people, and the American Academy of Pain Management warned that the CDC guidelines could block patient access to medications. No, it could block the same people who are making a fortune now from making even more. The new guidelines would encourage doctors to prescribe opioids as a last choice for chronic pain, a sharp departure from the status quo in which many doctors, under pressure from pharmaceutical sales representatives, i.e. drug pushers, often prescribe painkillers for mild back pain or a toothache. As experts note, many painkiller and heroin addicts start abusing opioids after receiving a legitimate prescription for pain-related medical issues. An investigation by The Intercept has found that pharmaceutical companies that dominate the $9 billion a year opioid painkiller market have funded organizations attacking reforms of the prescribed guidelines. How about that? Let's see who some of these people are. The Washington Legal Foundation is a nonprofit that litigates to defend free market principles. I love that. Free market principles so they can sell more narcotics. Threatened the CDC with legal action if the agency moved forwards with its proposed opiate guidelines. The WLG claimed that the CDC's advisory panel for the guidelines lacked fair ideological balance because it included a doctor who is part of the advocacy effort against opiate addiction. The WLG does not disclose donor information, but has filed a friend of court brief on behalf of Purdue Pharma. You know, that's right here in Indiana. Eli Lilly, one of the biggest drug-pushing companies in the world. And also their kingmakers with choosing governors and senators and everything else right here in Indiana. The makers of OxyContin, in a recent article with Pain News Network, a spokesman for Purdue Pharma concluded were longstanding supporters of WLF. In addition to several other business and legal organizations, we provided them with unrestricted grants. Yeah, get those narcotics out there. Get the whole country. Start giving them to kids in school and everything. Then there's the Pain Care Forum, organized opposition to the CDC prescribing guidelines, mobilizing regular meetings among stakeholders opposed to the idea because they're making too much money. According to an investigation by AP reporter Matthew Peroni, a recently refiled complaint by the city of Chicago found that Bert Rosen, the chief in-house lobbyist for Purdue Pharma, controls the Pain Care Forum. A former drug company employee allegedly told investigators that Rosen tells the Pain Care Forum what to do and how we do it, unquote. The Pain Care Forum is funded through the contributions by Purdue Pharma as well as major opiate manufacturers Cephalon, Endu, and Janssen, a subsidiary of Johnson & Johnson. And you thought the drug pushers on the street were your main problem. You ain't seen nothing yet. I mean, a good share of the whole country is on a high on drugs. And so, but you want to concentrate on the blacks down in the black neighborhood. That's sort of funny. The Power of Pain Foundation is another group funded by Purdue Pharma. Asked supporters to contact the CDC in opposition to the guidelines. We want more OxyContin out there, claiming that taking away pain medication and making providers afraid to prescribe due to your guidelines is only going to make more abusers, increase suicides, and tear apart the lives of millions. Talk about turning things around. Okay, here also is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a corporate lobbying group that represents opiate manufacturers. Remember, U.S. Chamber of Commerce is the ones who push to move all the factories out of the country and take your jobs, which causes you to need pain control pills. You need to take dope because the same outfit has promoted shipping your jobs to China. It's a round-robin deal, including Johnson & Johnson issued a press release masquerading as a news story criticizing the CDC guidelines. The U.S. Chamber operates a public relations effort to dress up as a bona fide media outlet for Legal Newsline, which it uses to disseminate stories that support the political priorities of its member companies. Well, there's quite a bit more of that, but you get the message. The country is awash with drugs. You're getting everybody hooked from kids to grandma, and it's killing people. But it's interesting how the system creates the conditions that cause people to have nervous breakdown, and then they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, I'll take care of that, take these pills. So it goes round and round and round, man. But they'll put a guy who sells marijuana in prison for 10 or 20 years for selling a few bags of marijuana. And these guys, they're pushing them in every drugstore, every doctor in the country. They're pushing this stuff. The overprescription of opioid products has made the United States the center of the painkiller abuse epidemic. Americans consume about 81% of the world's supply of OxyContin products, the active ingredient in OxyContin, and almost 100% of the hydrocodone, the active ingredient used in brands such as Vicodin. More than 16,000 people die from opiate painkiller overdose every year. And I'm sure it's more than that, too. The skyrocketing use of opiates in America is also closely linked to the rising heroin crisis, which reached new heights this year. Prescription opiates, which provide a high that is very similar to heroin, are often gateway drugs. As many as 4 out of 5 heroin users get started with opiate painkillers, probably given to them from their doctor. Now you know why millions of Americans, as white Americans, stand around on the corner and go, duh, no matter what happens. Oh, I don't know. I can't see the problem, man. Yeah. You thought I was going to leave you off with the fun part of the show. Well, what do we have here? From his first days as Commander-in-Chief, the drone has been President Barack Obama's weapon of choice, used by the military and the CIA to hunt down and kill people they don't like. Through the secretive processes, without indictment or trial worthy of execution, there's been an intense focus on the technology of remote killing. Yeah. But that often serves as a surrogate for what should be a broader examination of the state's power over life and death. You know, you can kill as long as you have a license. If you don't have a license, they throw you in prison. But if you have a license, yeah, the sky's the limit. You can kill anybody you want. Drones are a tool, not a policy. The policy is assassination. While every president since Gerald Ford has upheld an executive order banning the assassinations by U.S. personnel, Congress has avoided legislating the issue or even defining the word assassination. This has allowed proponents of the drone wars to rebrand assassinations with more palatable characterizations, such as the term du jour targeted killings. Yeah. I told you, Washington's Murder Incorporated. This Murder Incorporated, filled with psychopaths, war criminals that should be in prison or executed. When the Obama administration has discussed drone strikes publicly, it has offered assurances that such operations are more precise alternative to boots on the ground and are authorized only when an imminent threat is present and there is near certainty that the intended target will be eliminated. Those terms, however, appear to have been bluntly redefined to bear almost no resemblance to their commonly understood meanings. So, to avoid putting more and more white troops on the ground and others in the Middle East to get their ass blown off and get their legs blown off, well, we'll give you an alternative to that. Take your pick. The first drone strike outside of a declared war zone was conducted more than 12 years ago. Yet it was not until May 2013 that the White House released a set of standards and procedures for conducting such strikes. Those guidelines offered little specificity, asserting that the U.S. would only conduct a legal strike outside of an area of active hostilities. More double talk. If a target represents a continuing imminent threat to U.S. persons. Well, I thought U.S. persons are people who are in the U.S., not U.S. persons roaming around the world. Without providing any sense of the internal process used to determine whether a suspect should be killed without being indicted or tried. So you've got a Negro setting up there with his little button there to signal a guy in North Dakota to send a drone and murder somebody that he once murdered. So their president is head of Murder Incorporated. What else can you call it? Okay, let's see, where are we at here? The implicit message on drone strikes from the Obamsky administration has been one of trust, but don't verify. Yeah. Every one of these presidents gets to be more killer-oriented. The Intercept has obtained a cache of secret slides that provides a window into the inner workings of the U.S. military's kill-capture operations at a key time in the evolution of drone wars. Between 2011 and 2013, the documents, which also outline the internal views of special operations forces on the shortcoming and flaws of the drone program, were provided by a source within the intelligence community who worked on the type of operations and programs described in the slides. The Intercept granted the source's request for anonymity because the materials are classified and because the U.S. government has engaged in an aggressive prosecution of whistleblowers. People who tell the truth go to jail. People who lie and kill maintain their superiority in the government. The stories in this series will refer to the source as the source. The source said he decided to provide these documents to Intercept because he believes the public has a right to understand the process by which people are placed on hit lists and ultimately assassinated on orders from the highest echelons of the U.S. government. And you thought Murder Incorporated was nasty back in the day. Murder Incorporated is nothing like this. This outrageous explosion of watch listing, of monitoring people and racking and stacking them on lists, assigning them numbers, assigning them baseball cards, assigning them death sentences without notice on a worldwide battlefield. It was from the very first instance wrong, the source said. Quote, we're allowing this to happen. And by we, I mean every American citizen who has access to this information now but continues to do nothing about it. Well, we're doing something about it. We're letting people know about it. Well, you can't. What are you going to do? Get them to wake up? They're all on OxyContin and all them drugs. They don't give a shit who's killing who. The Pentagon, White House, and Special Operations Command all declined to comment. Of course, they always do. Remember Agent Orange? And now they don't even want to talk about depleted uranium. What? Depleted what? You must be crazy. A Defense Department spokesperson said, quote, we don't comment on details of classified reports. And, of course, every goddamn piece of paper that goes into Washington or comes out of it is classified. That's how they get around that. You never know anything because everything is classified unless we can develop an army of whistleblowers, an army of people who put the information out, WikiLeaks and all that. That's the only thing that can bring this under control. Only thing that can bring it under control. And these guys that do that should be our national heroes. That's right. Well, that's about it for today. This is Saturn's Day, of course, and I'll be back with you on Moon's Day. And lay off that damn over-the-counter drug stuff as much as possible. If you got a pain, try to put up with a little pain, you know. It's okay to take a pill once in a while, but I know that that's another way they're getting rid of senior citizens, by loading them up with these painkillers and stuff. And you don't think there's any connection? Huh, bullshit. They want to get the old people out of the way so they can fill the country up with more and more young, non-white people from other countries. The stupider, the better, too. Bye, y'all. 14-5. And what do you say? I have nothing to say, copper.
I picked up a little soundbite from a film, True Detective. You might have seen it, Matthew McConaughey. And the other one, I forgot his name. But anyhow, I thought this was pretty amusing, so I cut the clip out of the film to run it for you. And I forgot to tell you, this was these two detectives had gone to this tent revival meeting. They're looking for a guy, but the conversation between the two detectives is very interesting. One is agnostic, maybe atheist, but pretty logically speaking. The other one's sort of nominal Christian, but he's a rounder, he's a whoremonger, he's a drunk. So let's listen to this interplay between these two detectives as they're standing at the back of this crowd out of nowhere's land in a revival tent.
Parish FD said the church burned down 4 months earlier. No prince put out an APB on Friends of Christ. A week later, they were in Franklin. Revival ministry, old-time religion. You can imagine what Mr. Charisma thought of that. Who do you think the average IQ of this group is, huh? Can you see Texas up there on your high horse? What do you know about these people? Just observation and deduction. See a propensity for obesity, poverty, the yen for fairy tales. Folks putting what few bucks they do have in the little wicker baskets being passed around. I think it's safe to say that nobody here's going to be splitting the atom, Marty. You see that? Your fucking attitude. Not everybody wants to sit alone in an empty room beating off the murder manuals. Some folks enjoy community, the common good. Yeah, what's the common good? It's got to make that fairy tale, and it's not good for anybody.
You're the souls came you to this place. They divide you from what your heart knows. And there are a lot of good hearts out there. I'm looking out there. I've seen a lot of good hearts out there. I see a lot of good hearts out there.
I mean, can you imagine if people didn't believe what things they get up to? Exact same thing they do now. Just out in the open. Bullshit. It'd be a fucking freak show of murder and debauchery, and you know it. It's the only thing keeping a person decent is the expectation. judgment is infallible, piece of shit wise.
You think that notebook is a stone tablet?
What does that mean?
Thank you.